The Slow Melt is sponsored in part by Ecole Chocolat, the award-winning school for chocolate makers and chocolatiers. You'll learn from professional instructors, master techniques, and create mouth-watering recipes while interacting with your classmates and tutors all online. For more information, visit EcoleChocolat.com.
Welcome to the Slow Melt Makers series. I'm Simran Sethi, and today I'm speaking with Joe Winnie, the founder of Theo Chocolate, based in Seattle, Washington, in the United States. So Joe, before we get to the founding of Theo, I want to learn a little bit more about you.
Well, it's funny. My first encounter with chocolate was stealing it from my brother on Halloween and knowing that beyond any other candy in the bag, chocolate was what I loved the most. But it wasn't until my early 20s when I landed in Central America and was a volunteer for a small conservation foundation that I first smelled some of the Mayan women in the village roasting cocoa to make a cocoa drink that I absolutely fell in love with it as a really as a culinary, amazing, delicious food and medicine.
Wow. What a spectacular introduction to what you ended up doing. So you launched your first chocolate bar in 2006, but the work behind it started in 1994.
Right. And when I was a 20-year-old kid, I bought a beat-up old sailboat with a friend of mine and went sailing in Central America on the coast of Belize. And this was in the late 80s and early 90s. Fell in love with that part of the world, volunteered for a small conservation foundation, and part of my work was to work with indigenous Mayan farmers, and cocoa was one of their crops, and they had been growing cocoa for generations and generations. And, you know, I really couldn't believe what a beautiful, I mean, the tree is gorgeous, the way that it was being produced, and in this part of the world at the time, cocoa was grown as an understory crop in the rainforest. And so it was like being in a, like something that Dr. Seuss would have dreamed up. It was so incredible. And so I really absolutely fell in love with chocolate at that point in my life.
That's fantastic. I actually wrote in my book, the first time I entered into a forest where cacao was growing, it was like a Dr. Seuss story made manifest. And do you remember seeing your first cacao pods, like what that was like for you?
Well, it was incredible. I mean, my very first day, I was just a strong back. That's really what I had. I dropped out of high school. I didn't go to college. Mm-hmm. They handed me this rice sack with old seatbelts or shoulder straps and a shotgun and said, go with these guys and help them harvest cocoa. And I really thought, I was like, well, what's the gun for? Do I shoot the cocoa?
Oh, no.
What happens? Because I had no idea where chocolate came from.
Right.
Not a clue. I mean, as a kid growing up in Philadelphia, you know, maybe it came from cows in Switzerland. I really wasn't sure. And so here I was in the rainforest and seeing these incredible, beautiful, sumptuous pods growing right off the branches and the trunk of the tree. It was incredible that that's where chocolate came from. I mean, it was such an adventure.
For me, it was like, okay, well, there's a pod. Where's the chocolate flavor? Is it in the pulp around the seed? Is it in the seed? And the answer, of course, is no and no. Was that surprising to you at all? I mean, on every level, I was like, this is incredible. And we're still not there yet. The journey from cacao pod to chocolate bar is so shockingly long and complex and wonderful.
Well, it is. And, you know, the thing that really blew my mind is, you know, my job was to, as the farmers were cutting the pods off the tree, it was pretty hilly where we were. My job was to run around and gather up the pods and put them in a large pile. Oh, and by the way, the reason we had the gun is because there were poisonous snakes that were very aggressive, that were territorial in the area.
So you were going to shoot the snake or just fire a shot so they'd slide away?
One of the two, and both had actually happened.
Oh,
but the, you know, let me put it this way: no cocoa was shot that day. But in any case, the thing that really blew my mind was the flavor of the pulp, the mucilage, And so as we were cracking open the pods to scoop out the seeds covered in this beautiful fruit to put into our backpacks to carry back to the village to ferment and dry. So the men I was with were sucking on the seeds and then spitting the seeds back out. I tried it, and I couldn't believe that that was in any way related to chocolate. It was this beautiful kind of cantaloupe, tart, fruit flavor that was just remarkable. And then, I just couldn't really wrap my head around how you went from that to a chocolate bar. And finally, after several days of fermenting and then drying, you could start to get a sense of it. But even then, right, I mean, as you just said, it's so far away from what we think of as a chocolate flavor. And then the roasting. And when we were roasting it on the open flame on these sort of large metal pans, then that there was a cocoa aroma that started to come out. And at that point, I knew what was coming next. But it really is such an incredible journey.
It's one that we both love. Yeah. Your journey has been longer than mine. So take us back to 1994. What happens then?
Well, what I can say is that, you know, after spending time in this part of the world and seeing firsthand over a number of years that social and environmental degradation are really business problems. You know, it's the pursuit of money and trying to meet short-term needs that has had such a horrible negative impact on the globe, period. And I thought, here's chocolate. This is something that we give to people we love that has had such a devastating impact on the people who grow it. And it continues to be a problem today and a problem for the landscape that these farmers steward. I thought, wouldn't it be great if I could somehow hook up these farmers with a chocolate maker who would respect the way that they were growing cocoa there, which is in a diversified forest system, growing it organically. And at the time, the organic food industry was $1 billion. I thought, that's huge. Mm-hmm. Everybody's going to want organic chocolate. In any case, I hooked up with a very small chocolate maker in Brooklyn, New York, which is they're no longer with us, called Cocoa Line. And at the time, they were in bankruptcy, which I didn't know. And they said, well, listen, if you bring us cocoa beans and sugar, and by the way, bring us customers, we'd love to make organic chocolate for you. And I thought, well, if that's all I have to do, how hard can that be?
And that's great. Yeah, that's the easy part. Yeah.
You know, so I ended up going into business, which I wasn't really planning to do because I was having so much fun hanging out with the producers, but I was so passionate about creating this change. And one of our first customers was Newman's Own Organics, and they launched the first organic chocolate bar made in the U.S., and we had Cascadian Farm and a wide variety of other customers. And over several years, the vast majority of organic cocoa and chocolate products sold in North America came from this company I had built. And I had also spent an enormous amount of time developing raw material supply in Latin America and West Africa. This is in the 90s. And at that point, I knew that really and truly the only way to deliver on the promise, which is to have economic justice in the supply chain for cocoa, was to build my own brand and control manufacturing and the supply chain so that I could deliver on that promise. Because otherwise, there were just far too many people in the middle, and it was hard to pay the right prices and still have a product on the shelf that consumers were willing to buy. So it was a big, giant lesson that I learned in that process.
Wow. So then, how does Theo come into being? I mean, you have this vision. You know that you have to do this. How hard was it to actually put that dream into action?
It was very challenging. I had the original plans for a chocolate factory in, I want to say it was 1998 or 1999, in Boston. And it was so interesting how circumstances changed, because at the time it really was too early to deliver on something that where you're producing a high quality or premium product, but also to produce something that was ethical. And the perception from investors in Boston at the time was, you know, if you're going to go compete with Hershey and Mars and all these big guys, you're not going to do it. If it was such a good idea, somebody else would have. And in early 2000s, I found investors in the Pacific Northwest, which has always been one of my favorite parts of the country, who were willing to take that chance. And so that's when Theo finally came to life. We built the factory in 2005 and started making chocolate for sale in 2006.
Theo is the first organic, fair trade certified bean-to-bar maker in North America. There are, of course, many makers who have not made certification a priority and instead have emphasized the idea of direct trade or direct relationships. Can you tell me a little bit more about why certification matters to Theo and why you think it's important more broadly?
Well, there are a few different benefits for certification, and our business is built on direct relationships with not just producer groups, but with consumers and our customers. I mean, relationships matter, and it's a foundation of any success that we've had. But consumers increasingly want to be able to check the box on products that they buy. They want to know that they can exercise their values by purchasing a product, and the third-party certifications give them that opportunity. They can look at it very quickly, make a decision, move along. So there's value there. The other benefit is that having a third party that has standards that even at a minimum are respected also matters, because that oversight of having a third party provides benefits not just on your supply chain, but also at our factory level. So having the education that's provided through the certifiers at the farm level matters, but we also have our factory certified fair trade to make sure that we're reaching the highest standards. So I think third party helps to provide trust for consumers, and it provides trust for employees, and it provides trust for supplier partners that you have a set of standards that you're meeting in the production of your product.
Your beans come from two places right now, from the Democratic Republic of Congo and Peru. How did you form relationships in those countries, and why are those the places that you source from?
Well, it's interesting. I have worked in most cocoa-growing countries in Latin America and in many countries in West and East Africa. And one of the things that I found is that in order for our model to work and be successful, we need to have very, very strong, committed partners on the ground. And the way that our model works today is that where needed, we support technical assistance at the farm level to improve production and quality of the cocoa. We have a base price that we pay for minimum quality, but then we also offer a premium price ladder based on quality improvements, and the quality that we identify are weighted on attributes that are important to us as a manufacturer. So the higher the quality of the cocoa, the more efficient our process is and the higher quality of product we produce. And so in order for that to work, a lot of education is required and a lot of commitment is required. And so first and foremost, our partners in Congo and in Peru are really committed to that model. The second component is that the quality potential in each of these origins is high enough that we're able to really invest and have the kind of impact that we've always desired. And the way that we meet different producer groups in different origins varies. I've built a lot of relationships over the years that has allowed me to, you know, make headroads into different origins based on the strength of those relationships. In the case of Congo, which is not known as a cocoa producing country, there's an organization called the Eastern Congo Initiative, which contacted me when they were first being founded and asked if I would take a look at cocoa in Congo, if there was any. And at the time, the entire country was only exporting about 600 tons. This is 2009, 2010. Today, the country is exporting more than 10,000 tons, and we're sourcing more than 1,000 tons a year from Congo directly ourselves. So we've grown with them. But what was so fascinating about Congo is the commitment and the intensity that the producer showed to creating change. they're some of the most resilient people I've ever met in my life. Because as you might know, more than 5 million people have died because of war and disease in Eastern Congo. It's a site of the worst humanitarian tragedy since World War II. And it's more or less a failed state. And many people have really questioned the wisdom, if there is any, in sourcing more than half of our cocoa from this very difficult place. And the irony is that in my entire career, I've never had more success than we have had in Congo because of the strength of our partnerships, the commitment of the producers, and the support that we've received from ECI and other key partners there.
And ECI is?
Eastern Congo Initiative.
This podcast is brought to you by Rotar Chocolate Machines, a chocolate grinder designed and built by a chocolate maker for chocolate makers and made in the United States. Get all of the details at www.rotar.com. This episode is also brought to you by Blue Apron, the meal delivery service that works directly with artisanal purveyors and family-run farms to bring meals to your door. Get $30 off your first order, plus free shipping, by going to blueapron.com/chocolate. The Slow Melt would like to thank TCF Sales from Austin, Texas, a full-service equipment provider for chocolatiers and chocolate makers, for supporting the Fine Chocolate Industry Association during their summer 2017 Elevate Chocolate Silent Auction.
You talked about how these producing countries are providing cacao that does adhere to your quality standards. What is it that you're looking for in these origins and with these suppliers?
For most chocolate manufacturing, two of the most important components are the level of fermentation and bean size. Both of these have an impact. Bean size is important for the efficiency of production, and then fermentation is one of the most important ways for expressing a certain flavor. And without going too far into the weeds, each origin we identify an ideal level of fermentation that we believe maximizes the flavor potential of those beans. You know, there are a lot of chocolate makers that will only talk about a few different varieties, and the reality is that there's thousands and thousands of different varieties and combinations of flavors within the beans, not just in a particular country, but even on a particular farm, you might see tremendous variety. So over a particular volume of cocoa, that particular volume will have its own unique characteristics. So we do a lot of work to try to identify what the ideal fermentation level is to express the flavor of that particular place.
Terrific. I can hear some noise behind you, and of course it's because you're at the office. What is the size of your operation? How have you grown from those early days to today?
Well, today we are 100 employees. We're producing not quite 3 million pounds, and you know, we've had a lot of growth over the last several years, but we've grown very carefully.
You're almost in this, what it sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but like the in-between place, right? So you're not a small micro-batch specialty chocolate maker, and you're not a big manufacturer. You're somewhere in the middle. How do you self-define? I mean, is that even something that you worry about? There's, of course, a lot of conversations right now around craft chocolate, and what exactly is it?
It is an interesting question, because the reality is, in order to make chocolate as we know chocolate, you need exactly the same process, whether you're very small or very large. You're heating and roasting a cocoa bean. You are crushing it to a certain particle size that you enjoy for mouthfeel and for flavor release. You're including other ingredients that you're also milling to a certain size. And then you're conching it to release the volatile acids and to help develop the flavor. And from the very, very small micro-batch chocolate makers all the way up to the largest manufacturers you could imagine, the process is exactly the same. The types of equipment may vary a little bit. Even within one chocolate factory, they may vary, but it's the same. So I don't really prescribe to the idea of craft or artisan. It doesn't really fit. All you can do is suggest that this is a very small batch and something is larger. What's also interesting about that to me is that ultimately what we're talking about is the intention of the maker, and that somehow there's an idea for consumers that if you're very small, that somehow there's something more interesting about that. The proliferation of very small chocolate makers is the best thing that has ever happened to our industry as a whole. The level of education that they're providing consumers, I think, is exciting. Elevating the perceived value of cocoa is absolutely wonderful. And so there's an opportunity to really drill into what makes that unique. And it's not the size. And there's a missed opportunity, I think, that a lot of these small makers have, which is they need to talk about their own particular passion, and that it's small is not better. It's their unique passion and the flavors that they're trying to express and the products that they're trying to make that's so interesting. As a very large chocolate manufacturer, there is the same intention applied to saying we're intentionally choosing to make a certain product that has X, Y, and Z characteristics. And ironically, the very large chocolate makers have the ability to be far more precise in their flavor development than the very small chocolate makers. And so the missed opportunity is not talking about, well, we're small and they're big. There's something wrong there. That it's the exact opposite. You're small, you have a unique flavor quality that you're producing that is a result of your passion. Talk about that. Because what the big guys may not have is the same quality of passion.
That's really interesting. I mean, what I'm hearing is it's both and. But that intentionality, it sounds like, is something that's held for you throughout the journey of Theo, regardless of how much you've expanded.
Oh, there's no doubt. And as far as how I characterize ourselves, I think we are, in effect, a very small chocolate maker. We're not a micro chocolate maker, but we're very small because there's a big leap. Mm-hmm. You know, some would say there's a very big leap from the small micro chocolate makers to Theo, and that may be true, but it's a much, much larger leap from Theo to the big guys. And so we are kind of in this unique space, but the intention that we've had is to really change the way that the industry does business, which is to have the highest perceived value of a cocoa-based product that delivers social and economic justice, environmental justice throughout its supply chain. And so we're trying to build a business that if the big guys can look at it and say, wow, they've been successful while doing the right thing, you know, and they are willing to change the way that they operate, then we've been successful in our business. If there's an influence that we have over consumers, that consumers start to respect and value not only social, economic, environmental justice, but a certain quality of product. And there are very small makers who are innovating on flavor development at a pace that we can't because they are attracting a loyal, interested, educated consumer base. That's amazing as well. All of those things, all of us together really elevate, you know, what to me is one of the most amazing, most beautiful, mysterious, incredible crops, cocoa. There is really truly nothing like it. And so, you know, I think all of us required together can do something really amazing.
Before we taste chocolate, I'd like you to define for me one more term, and that is justice. You have used that a lot. It's an incredibly important idea. How are you defining economic justice, social justice, environmental justice?
Well, what we're trying to do is maximize the value that a producer has within our supply chain. So to give you an example, if you look at our business, there are certain price points that our product sells well at, right? And we try to keep those price points as high as we can because we're delivering a price back to the farmers that is as high as it can be within that supply chain. But the justice is the fact that we're not paying a premium just because a farmer might not have made a lot of money selling cocoa in the past. We're paying a premium for quality attributes that are important to us. So you can take all the altruism out. And it's good business because the entire chocolate industry is based on a supply base whose producers are fundamentally bankrupt. And so if we can help secure our supply by paying a premium for quality that allows us to be a more successful business, that to me is justice because we're helping to ensure that those producers are not bankrupt, they're thriving economically. In addition, if they have faith in their ability to earn a solid income as a result of being a supplier to Theo, if they have belief that their future is more secure, they're more willing to invest in their landscape and not make short-term decisions that actually reduce the sustainability of their farm. So the environmental justice is cocoa by biological design is an understory in the rainforest. If you can support that by helping farmers invest in their landscape, their long-term economic opportunity is substantially higher, and it happens to actually work well for the environment. It's not altruism. It really is just good business, and it happens to work for the people on the planet.
So let's taste the fruits of their labor. I am opening up, as we speak, the Theo Bread and Chocolate 70% bar. Can you tell me a little bit about how this came together?
So this is actually one of the very first products that we ever made and sold. And the 70% chocolate is a combination of cocoa from the Democratic Republic of Congo in Watalinga, which is inside Virunga National Park, where the producers are, and Peru, which is coming from the Piura region. And it's a blend that we do for a variety of our products because we think that it expresses the quality of the cocoa well and pairs with a variety of different inclusions. The bread is coming from Essential Baking, which is just down the street, and it's a French bread that we slather with butter, we toast it, and then we, you know, crunch it up to, you know, do our version of a pain au chocolat, which was the original inspiration several years ago for this product.
Is this, my mouth is now full. This is a product that you created early on and then you brought back?
It was something that we sold only, and still to this day, really only in specialty outlets. So when we first made it, we did have a slightly different blend of cocoa in the dark chocolate than we have today. But it's always been a favorite. And just recently, we relaunched this line to have packaging that was a little bit more updated than what we had originally created. And I have to say, this was something we thought about nixing it. And when we reached out to consumers about that idea, the response was overwhelming. Please don't get rid of bread and chocolate. To me, there's a slight sourness to it. The salt, the butter, and the crunch of the bread all together, I love. And so I was glad that I had some consumers behind us asking us to keep making it.
Give the people what they want.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about this blend. How would you describe the flavors in the cocoa?
So it's an interesting blend because if you were to just taste a single origin DRC liquor that we do or chocolate, it's a higher roast and it's nutty. It has some very traditional kind of cocoa brownie notes to it. And when we blend it with Peru, which is a little bit more sour, some dried berry fruit notes, you end up with a complexity that I think is far more interesting than a single origin of either one of those particular beans. And the depth between that very traditional cocoa chocolatey note that we think of often when we think of chocolate blended with that more sour fruit flavor coming from Peru, it's a unique experience.
Tell me what else you're eating. What's your current favorite bar made by another maker or manufacturer?
Well, I'll say, and this has been the case for a long time, my favorite chocolate maker in North America is Art Pollard with Amano. I love his products. I mean, he has made some of the best chocolate that I have ever had. So whatever he produces with Venezuelan beans, I think is really some of the best expression of that origin that I've ever had.
Is there anything else that you'd like a new maker to know or a chocolate eater to know about making chocolate?
Well, one of the things that I would like a new maker to really focus on is the fact that their own personal passion is what is so important to consumers. And the more that they know their consumers and can identify who it is that they either want to sell to, who they expect to buy their products, to make products that those people also love, right? Because at the end of the day, as a chocolate maker, you are a conduit. You're the alchemist, to overuse a word, but you are the person who is helping to deliver the promise of all of the beautiful ingredients that you source and combine those in a way that delivers on those ingredients' promise and satisfies the people who you're selling your product to. So know your customer and infuse them with your passion and make products that they really love. That's what I think is most important. And what was the other part of the question?
And for chocolate lovers, for those of us on the receiving end of all of this hard work.
Yeah. Well, I actually think that, you know, to not never be intimidated by any product, any package, hopefully any price point, and to be open-minded when you try and taste new chocolate, because there are some products out there that I think really push the edges of cocoa and flavor. And while they're not traditional at all, the fact that they're not traditional is what makes them so amazing. And to be open-minded to those flavors and to really experiment and find what you love and not be afraid to ask the chocolate makers questions about where their cocoa is coming from and to tell you more about their supply chain and how they make it and to really explore the chocolate maker's passion as much as you're interested in doing that. I think all of those components together is what makes the experience so enjoyable.
Thank you so much, Joe.
Thank you, Simone.
Podcast listeners, you can learn more about Theo Chocolate on their website, theochocolate.com, and use the code SLOWMELT to get a discount on the deliciousness that we just experienced. You can also order the Maker Series Tasting Pack featuring all 9 bars in this series exclusively through chocolopolis.com. Check our website, slowmelt.com, for all details, discount information, and the dates of the promotion. To hear shows on the dominant flavors in chocolate and how best to discover them, find the Slow Melt episodes on our website or look for us on iTunes, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram at The Slow Melt. The Slow Melt Maker Series is mixed and produced by Katie Ranke with guidance from Sean Corey Campbell and written and edited by me, Simran Sethi, with support from Sasha Woodruff. Our title track, Soldier, is written and performed by The Slackers. Join us week after next for a Maker Series episode featuring Fruition Chocolate and our final tasting session of the season. And if you like what you're hearing, please tell your friends, consider giving us a review or donating, and subscribe through your favorite podcast app. Choco love and thanks for all your support.